Have you ever wondered how sound can heal, inspire, and transform your life? What if the vibrations around you could unlock your true potential and guide you to a deeper sense of harmony? Welcome to Sound Pathways, the groundbreaking journey into the healing power of sound, creativity, and connection with your host, Dr. Karen Olson. In each episode, she explores the profound link between your mind, body, and spirit. From composers and musicians to sound healers and visionary leaders, she'll dive into captivating conversations that reveal how sound shapes your reality, heals our wounds, and helps us manifest our dreams. And guess what? You're part of the conversation. So call in and ask questions and experience personalized sound healing live. And let your sound be your guide to the life you've always dreamed of.
Hello, and welcome to Sound Pathways. This is such an exciting show. We are so blessed. We're going to be talking about sounding success, the transformative power of speaking and singing to your brains. And that's plural. Yes, the guest we have is just such a gift. So inspiring. We're welcoming Rick Schnabel. He's Australia's number one brain on trainer, a transformational coach who went from financial ruin to being a multimillionaire. He's helped over 350,000 people break through barriers to emotional freedom, clarity, and prosperity. Together, we're going to explore the vibrational power of thoughts and words and how we can reprogram the mind for success on every level, communicating with the brain in ways that are similar to music. Rick will share how intention, word choices, tone, and silence engage the head, heart, and gut brains, unlocking their neural pathways that support well-being and abundance. Discover how your thoughts and voice can become powerful tools for shifting beliefs, elevating your mood, and aligning with the frequency of success. Get ready for a transformational experience. When Rick shares a powerful meditation, he'll guide us. Well, you're going to have a treat. So please, please help me welcome Rick. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Karen, for allowing me to come on to the program. I get a sense that there's an incredible resonance. You share similar values to what I share, and so it's been an absolute blessing to get to meet you and work with you too.
Oh yeah, I'm so thankful, and I'm really thankful I get to share this message that's going to help so many people and lift them up. So I'm so curious that you've been called Australia's number one brain on trainer. What exactly is a brain on trainer, and how did you journey from financial ruin to multimillionaire status, and how you lead from there?
Well, I guess a good place to start is understanding that in our world is created through conditioning. You know, what happens is, you know, of course, we're raised by families who have been conditioned. And they're being conditioned by their environment. They're being conditioned by all sorts of things. So I'll speak very specifically in my life. Both my parents, they were immigrants to Australia. They had been raised through a depression. They then went to the Second World War. And they experienced hardship, challenge, and adversity at almost every single area of their lives. So that became their conditioning. Now, what conditioning does is it creates perception, you know, how we actually see the world. So reality might be that, you know, the sun comes up, the sun goes down, but we are meaning-making machines. And so what we do is we constantly look at what does this mean? And so with my mother and father, they both meant, what is my life? My life is hard. And so they lived life as if it was hard. They struggled. They had enormous challenge. Now, I'm just a new baby being born into this world. I've got no idea what this world really is. So what I do is just like all of us, we look at our parents and we say, how does a man treat a woman? Okay, I'll watch my dad. All right, so that's how you do it. And then how does a woman treat a man? I watch my mother. So that's how you do it. So here's my level of expectation now. So the biggest challenge for me growing up, and particularly coming into the world of work, was money. Money for me was like a roller coaster, and it was hard, and it was challenging, and I couldn't earn $100,000. There was a glass ceiling that said I cannot earn above that, and I would get stressed and anxious whenever it came to the topic of money. And I just learned that from my mother and father. But I remember there were two American people that I had worked with, and they saw the world completely differently to me. And they challenged my thinking and they challenged my understanding until there was this one moment in my life where I just got married, about to have a child. I was down to 27 Australian dollars
Wow.
in my bank account. And it was the first time in my life that I actually thought, oh my God, I'm going to be homeless. I'm going to be one of those people living in a laneway, trying to find a box or newspapers. But I was going to be there with my wife and my newborn child. And oh, I was so stressed. And I remembered something that one of my mentors said to me. And he said, when are you going to draw the line? When are you going to draw that line and say, I am no longer showing up as the person that I was. I am now going to be a new person. And I remember the moment that I made that decision and I was going to walk into an office in a job that I was staring at losing my job. And so I said, that's it. I've had enough. And so I said, I'm going to walk into that office, but I'm going to walk into that office differently today. I'm going to walk into that office as if I was a multimillionaire. So I'd never been a multimillionaire. I'd never seen $1 million. I had no idea what this looked like. So I had to use my imagination. So I walked into the office and I imagined what it would feel like to be a multimillionaire. I had this crazy idea. I don't know why, but I thought of having $13 million in my bank account. Why 13 million? I don't know. It was the first number that came to my mind. But what was quite profound was the feeling. And I thought about what would it feel like if you had $13 million in your bank account? It creates all these new thoughts and ideas. And I thought, I wouldn't have to work. I wouldn't have to do anything. In fact, I could do whatever I wanted to do. And I remember I went to the very back wall of my office, which was just floor-to-ceiling glass. And I just looked at the city of Melbourne and I thought, what would I do if I had $13 million in my bank account? And I had just learnt coaching and neuro-linguistic programming. And I said to myself, I would help people. That's what I would do. I would help people. And I felt so excited. And I started to think, what would my office smell like if I was a multimillionaire? And I could smell leather and beautiful wood and a honey wax on the wood. And I thought, what would it sound like? And I thought, I would hear this beautiful music very quietly. I would have this little sound of a little water feature. Trickling water, down rocks or something like that. And I felt incredibly different. But something magical happened in that moment. My phone rang, which, by the way, I was in sales and my phone never used to ring. And so my phone rang and it kind of shocked me. And I picked up the call. And in this one phone call, I made half a year's salary.
Wow.
Like half a year's income, just this one phone call. But the fantastic thing that happened with this new way of feeling and thinking, it happened three times.
Wow.
The phone rang again. Like I did this again about a week later, the phone rang again, and I made another half a year's income in that one phone call. And this is from a phone not ringing. This phone never
Right.
used to ring. And then I thought to myself, wow, the first amount and the second amount is so similar that I thought maybe even though this is exciting, there's still a limit on it. And I thought, what would happen? Could I double this? Could I double this? The third phone call that came through was exactly the two amounts combined.
Wow.
And I thought, this is magical. Like, this is magical. And I thought to myself, can we create this? Are we the manifestors of our lives? Do we create our lives? Just like I'd created poverty, just like I'd created, $27 in my bank account, I equally now started earning my annual income. I started earning that each month, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden, I went from the worst salesperson that this company had ever had to becoming the best
Wow.
that they'd ever had in the history of the company. And they even investigated me because they thought there's something wrong here. How does a guy who we were going to kick out of the office and completely erode his job, how could he go from that to being the best that we've ever had? And my whole world went magical. And I remember a good friend of mine said, "You've got to write about this. You've got to teach. How did you get there? How did you go from this to this? And you've got to write about it." And so I wrote about it in a book called A Richer Way to Think. And it became a bestseller, and all of a sudden, people from all over the world were going, "How do you do this? How do you do this? Can you coach me? Can you teach me?" And that's how I became a multimillionaire. It just
Wow.
completely changed my world. It really did.
Wow,
But
that's exciting.
the untraining the brain, I never really answered that.
Oh.
The untraining the brain was what I didn't share was in between these moments, I was getting coached and I was changing my beliefs, I was changing my patterns, I was changing my expectations, I was even changing my state. And that's a really, really key piece. The thing is that we don't do what we don't do from thinking. All our thinking comes from feeling. And it's a resonance, it's a vibration. It's a, I mean, Karen, you certainly know it. Music. You know what it feels like when you create a melancholy piece. You know what it feels like when you create an uplifting piece. It's a different vibration. It's you're doing the same thing in your body. And music can be a great symphony for that.
Wow. I love what you're sharing so much, also because one of the themes I focus on here is creativity in such a way that you create those dreams and the action steps. And but the way that you explained it was exactly how I see it, that it's so specific in how you feel it and you live it. And then those thoughts create that in your lives. And it's so powerful, so powerful. We also talk a lot about vibrations and sound here on Sound Pathways. So, how could you share about how thoughts and words, our inner language, connect with the idea of vibrational healing?
Well, it's a little bit like this. I'll give you a real recent example. There's a lady that I was coaching the other day, and she's a coach. And the biggest challenge that a lot of coaches have is how do I get clients? I've got all these great skills, but how do I get clients? And so I coach a lot of coaches and helping them to do that. And I said to her, she'd gone through this big transition. I said to her, I said, "Things are going really well right now for you, aren't they?" And she said, magically. She said, I've got, she coaches children who are feeling anxious, and she coaches them into confidence and courage. And, and she's got all these techniques that I taught her that she uses. And she said, yeah, it's great. Clients are coming from everywhere. People are referring people, and they're just coming. And I said to her, but you believe that clients come easily, don't you? And she said, absolutely. She said, it's my affirmation, what I say every single day with complete faith, complete belief, complete embodiment. I say that every day more and more people are coming to my website and they want to work with me because they know I can help them. And that's what she just believes utterly. And so if you think about it, that too is just like me walking in the office going, I'm walking in as a multimillionaire. She's walking into her office and she's saying, people are just going to keep coming. People are just going to keep coming. But it's not just about affirmations, because affirmations without feeling, without resonance, without vibration is like bludgeoning the unconscious with a baseball bat. Like if you say, hey, I'm really, really wealthy, and then all of a sudden you go, yeah, but I feel so poor. There's an incongruence that actually happens. So the real key of brain untraining is you've got to get in there, you've got to get in here, and you've got to say, what are the contradictory beliefs, memories, language patterns, meta programs, things that I have in here that go, that really conflict, that actually go against what I'm feeling or what I'm intending for my life. So there's got to be a congruence. You've got to get that congruence. It's a little bit like, musically, if you were sitting there playing music and you're thinking rock and roll and you're trying to play a classical piece, th there's a discord, and you won't play it as well because you've got this discord going on. So it's having complete utter congruence, within those three brains, the head, the heart, and the gut brain.
Wow, that's powerful. It's these blocks that sometimes are so hidden and how to discover them. And so language, you describe it as a sonic architecture. So, can you describe how the sonic scaffolding for change works and what it means, how hypnotic language patterns like the Milton and meta models work, like music, to rewire the brain?
Well, it's a little bit like this. In fact, there was a person I was coaching just before we got on today, and I worked out with her that the reason that she was having so much sadness in her life was that we worked out that when she was, in fact, I've still got the notes here. Of course, I won't mention her name because it's all confidential. But when she was 3 years old, what essentially happened is she was with her cousins, and her cousins started criticizing her. Now, criticism in the body feels terrible, unless we're fully resilient. But typically, when people criticize us, particularly when we're very young, like three, what happened for her is she wanted to get out of that feeling. So instead of defending herself, she learned a strategy, which was retreat. But she's been using that one strategy for everything that feels uncomfortable in her life. So whenever life gets uncomfortable, she retreats. So she's now in her 50s, having retreated. She's not married. Why? Because there was a man who really loved her, but she felt uncomfortable and retreated. She had many opportunities to buy a home. She hasn't got a home. Why? Because there were lots of opportunities. She felt uncomfortable committing to the loan, and she retreated. She looks at jobs. She has a lot of eclectic jobs, not one powerful career. Why? Because every time she gets to a point where she has to commit to a job, she retreats. And it all came down to 3 years old. Then she was 5 years old, and of course, this is why I won't share her name. She weed herself in class. And you could just imagine, how people would feel in that context. So what happened is she again wanted to retreat out of that class. She wanted to shrink, she wanted to hide. So when we think of, the meta programs that we start to build in our brain, we start to build this languaging. And it's a little bit like you can't say, I feel like I am crap. You wouldn't say that. You'd say, I feel like I'm crap. So the tonality and the pacing and, the feeling that comes with the words creates a resonance. So we would expect if we're going to heighten it, we're going to say, I feel amazing. And we'd be congruent to it. So it would be a completely different song. It would be a completely different story. It would be all the embodiment of that feeling. And so this is what we do as humans. We create this symphony that sits somewhere. It actually sits, it literally does. It sits somewhere in our body. And that feeling becomes this perpetuating thought, factory that just keeps bringing up these thoughts. Someone says, hey, could you do this project? And we go, yeah, sure, no problem. And we put on the brave face and we do all that. But inside we go, oh my God, not that again. I'm terrible at this. Oh my God, someone's gonna call me out at some point and they're gonna realize I'm a fraud. Oh my God, I'm such a fraud. But I hate even using these examples because you can feel it. Now, the thing is that the thing that we have to understand as people is all of these things are illusions. But they're, as Einstein said, they're very persistent ones. They just keep showing up again and again, the illusion, until we believe it. So our reality, our facts, are formed through our conditioning. Our conditioning becomes our perceptions of how we see the world. And so that becomes our altered reality. And so that becomes our illusion. And many of us live in altered realities. He doesn't love me. She doesn't love me. I'm not good enough. At some point, they're going to tap me on the shoulder and they're going to say, you're a fraud. These are thoughts that have an origin somewhere. So, as a coach, my job is to find the origin story. And then I have a process that typically what I do is I get someone to really look at the origin story and go, yeah, that's the origin story. But my question to you, my transformational question to you, is what did you not learn from that story that is causing you to believe in that story and keep that story and perpetuate that story? What did you not learn? So through my poverty period, something that I learned through that poverty period was that I can make ends meet. I can be resourceful. I can toil. I can work hard. And sure, that were all the learnings that I got through that time. But once you get learnings, the brain's not unlike a computer. It's zeros and ones, yeses and nos, good or bads. It's very black and white. So you go back to those terrible times when there's no learnings, and all you think is your energy goes low. You become parasympathetic. You breathe out more than breathe in. And you go, I quit. I give up. It's useless. It's terrible. Or you get sympathetic, which is you breathe in. And you want to fight everyone, but both are useless, really, or certainly not helpful. So what you do is you get into those programs, you learn from them, and instead of them being bad, you start to realize, wow, those were terrible times, but now I look at them, wow, how much did I learn from those events. So your brain does a flip and it starts to, it almost ignores those times because it's just pulled the learning out. It doesn't have to remember those times in life. It doesn't have to. It's just learnt from them. So it progresses and it moves forward and it looks towards the future instead of working life with a rear vision mirror the entire time. Does that make sense?
Oh, a lot of sense. And I think often those experiences come from our parents and their experiences and how they pass it to us and how they told us and defined us and who we were, what role we had, and the definition of love and all those things. And the stories just magnify and are repeated and just get bigger. And we're almost hostages to those stories who are not our truth, who we really are. So it's so beautiful to learn and to have this ability to change how the brain changes. And it's really awesome. And you're talking about rhythm and tone. And if you could even share more about the role in the transformational language and how we could say something to make it more healing or more harmful, how would that be?
I think the simplest of examples is the word love and fear. You know, if we think about everything, we're either at one end or we're at the other end. You know, so we're either at the fear end or we're at the love end. You know, and so when we translate that into language, it is, I love, you know, is completely different to I hate. You know, like love, even if we look at it from a physical sense, you know, it's usually expressive. It's outward. Whereas when we get into the fear state, it's retractive. It draws in the body. It turns people almost fetal. You know, whereas when we are in our space where we're this, you know, we're opening up and we're opening up to a whole new level. So, you know, I often will be thinking very specifically about my languaging as I'm coaching someone. So it'll sound like this. Someone might say, you know, I suck at my job, Rick. You know, I'm stuck. I'm stuck. I'm stuck. And I know it's got everything to do with this and it feels so bad. And it's that sort of tone. So my tone is I'll say, you know, I'll drop my physiology and I'll go, I get it. You know, I'll get it. You know, I felt like that once too. You know, most of us have felt like that at some particular point, you know, and then you can rise your tone just a little, but there is opportunity in everything. You know, and it's almost like you're taking, you know, it's a bit of mystery. There's like, whoo, I feel something shifting. I feel something forming. And then you could go, but what if there's one thing that you could learn from this terrible thing? You know, and you can go down again, this terrible thing. What if there's one thing that you can learn to come up to a whole new level and see the world in magical or new ways? What would your life look like now? So you know, I mean, that's very quick and it's very progressive, but in a coaching session, what you're doing is you're using sound, you're using tone, sometimes you're using pause, you know, to allow good things to go in. You know, it's those moments of music. You know, I remember many years ago I was in advertising and I was given this brief. There was an organization that helped the elderly, and they were going to lose their funding. And the brief to me was, could you create a video, you know, like a documentary that the board members, you know, and the investors could watch that would cause every single person in that room to cry and sign a check so we get our funding? And I said, oh my God, I'd love to do this. I would love to do this. And so what I did is I created a story. I started this documentary off with a story. And it was just a sunrise. And it was this little child running along a beach in slow motion. And then you saw his sister behind him. And then you saw mother and father walking, and behind them there was grandfather and grandmother walking. So it was the generations. And what I was trying to convey in this is that there's this beautiful continuum that happens in humanity. You know, it's that joy when a child is born, and you know, and the grandparents feel different about the child than the parents do, but there's this beautiful synchronicity that happens. And I wanted to talk about how important aging is. Because, of course, we were trying to create funds to look after these aging people. And the magic was, sure, the script was great and the vision was great, but the magic was the piano piece that sat there underneath it all with this incredibly extended pauses through the notes. And you could feel the emotion in that music in that moment. And this is when we understand we are music. We really, really are. Some of us are very sad songs. You know, some of us are uplifting. Some of us are very wise and purposeful. And it's all constructed in the tempo. It's constructed in, you know, do you put the strings in? Do you put the brass in? You know, what about the percussion underneath it? You know, is it chaotic or is it purposeful and rhythmical? And, you know, there's a beautiful synergy between humanity and music, and there's something that really happens when we, oh, I love music, you know, and it's, you know, well, of course you do too, Karen. I mean, it's your thing. And you know that when you construct music, when you're creating music, like I've listened to some of your beautiful pieces,
Thank you.
and there's feeling in it. You know, it's we can all be technically brilliant, and that's great and that's fantastic. But you put someone who puts all their heart, all their care, all their love into that technical brilliance, and what you get is you get artistry meeting science and mathematics, and the world opens up to a whole new magical place. The
Oh,
brain's the same.
that's so beautiful. I do love communicating through my heart with the music, and I love listening to you because words are so powerful also, and it's not just the words we say, but the words we think and all the
Yes.
patterns, and just thinking of the brain like a symphony. Like you're saying, of all the different ways we can express. And you teach how we don't have just one brain. We actually have three: the head, the heart, and the gut. How does language speak differently to each one of these brains?
That is a fantastic question because they do speak very, very differently to those, you know, those brains have a character and have a personality.
But would it be the same phrase, the same phrase, and the three brains hear it differently, or are you?
They are different. You know, like for example, if you think of the head brain is the most complex of all. You know, the head brain has stories, has metaphors, has meaning. It's very this equals that. You know, this happens because that happens. It's very mathematical, strategic, creative. It can go off in a million directions. In fact, you know, it's suggested that we've got billions of neurons in our head. Whereas when you go to the heart brain, it's a very, very different brain. You know, there's about 40,000 neurons, you know, much less than you know, multi-billions. And so as a result, the heart is simpler. The heart's language is often one or two or three words, whereas the head brain is long, long sentences and complexity, much complexity to it. Hence, we can get lost in our thoughts. But the heart is very, very pure and very simple. The heart is very much about our values. You know, what's important to me? What do I love? What hurts me? what means a lot to me? What do I value? So the heart is very much about our values. So then we get the gut. Now, the gut is even simpler. The gut sometimes won't even talk to you. Like when I'm coaching somebody and I'm using, the science of the head, the heart, and the gut brain in coaching, you will do something like that. Usually the process begins with the heart. So you say, what does the heart want? What do you really, really want? And sometimes the heart can take a while to share what it wants, because one of the most unanswered questions for the large majority of people is, what do I want? You ask that question to 100 people, you might get three answers from three people.
Really?
There's a lot of people who just do not know what they want. They don't spend enough time in their heart. They spend too much time in their head. This is the shoulds, the have-tos, the musts. I should get a career. I should be a doctor like my father. I should do this. I should do that. Whereas the heart, it doesn't have shoulds, musts. It just is.
Would
So
you
if
say it
we,
just the heart just feels, do you think,
yeah,
or is, and
the heart feels deeply.
can that sometimes people get kind of hardened and the heart's almost blocked, or
Oh yeah. Yeah, they don't spend any time there at all. People in breakups, classically, particularly terrible breakups, can, basically harden their heart, worse, darken their heart. So if we spent more time in our hearts going, what do I really, really want? What do I truly want? We'll find that people live lives that have more joy in them than expectation and meeting hierarchy and what people think we should do. Whereas the gut is very different. The gut is about courage. The gut is also about sustainability. Like if you think about it, the gut wants to make sure that the decisions that you're making with your head and the values that you're following with your heart ensure that your gut gets to eat. Because if you don't eat, you die. So the guts, like each of these organs, they've discovered, like they only discovered that we had a heart brain in 1995. That wasn't all that long ago. So when people say trust the science, well, sometimes we've got to trust for the science to catch up with what is really going on. And the thing that's so important is sometimes what we hear is we hear conflicts between, and this is why some people can't achieve certain things that they're wanting, because their heart might say, I really want to be a musician. And the head is filled with mum and dad and uncle and aunt and people who said, you can't be a musician, there's no money in it. Well, talk to you too. Talk to the Beatles. And so what happens is the heart then shuts down. It says, okay, so I can't be a musician because I have to get a real job. And so now you've got this inner conflict going. So something's got to turn on and something's got to turn off, or they're going to fight. So whatever is stronger wins. But then what happens is if we then say, okay, I want to be a musician. So the head says, okay, so how are you going to make this happen? Okay, first I've got to study. I've got to get practice. I've got to get good at it. I've got to choose my instrument. I've got to master my instrument. Great. The heart says, fantastic, let's get this strategy happening. And then the gut says, yeah, but we don't get to eat, do we? And then what happens? If the gut says no, you're not moving forward. The gut is very, very strong. If you can't convince your gut that it's going to be safe and it's going to get fed, then you will not move forward, regardless of how much strategy, regardless of how much heart you have. So, just a little thing, and I think this would be really helpful for people listening. The big question is, where are your decisions coming from? Are your decisions coming from your gut? In other words, if it gets finally to the gut, you know you're going to move forward. So a good thing to do is put your hand on your shoulder and then put your other hand on your gut. And then as you're thinking about a decision, whichever hand is moving up and down, that tells you where your thinking is coming from. So for example, if that's going up and down, it means you're breathing high. And if you're breathing high, you're probably working from stress. But if your bottom hand on your gut, when you're about to make the decision, is going up and down, it means you're breathing low and you're breathing calm. So it's a calm, considered decision. So I coach a lot of traders, stock traders. And I say to them, when you're trading, do this before you place that trade and make
That's
sure
great.
it's not this hand going up when you're going to place that trade, because chances are you're going to break your rules, you're working from stress, or you're working from scarcity. So go with that one.
That is so beautiful. How in this model, how would you describe emotional eating? Like people that struggle with their weight, and when they're really stressed out, they turn to those comfort foods that maybe they had as a child, or the carbs or whatever. Is how would that work in this model?
Well, I mean, the way that you phrase that, you totally get it, Karen. It is very much, comfort eating a lot of the time. We've got to, one way that we've really got to think about life is stop thinking about everything as being negative, because the truth is, regardless of our behaviors, it all has a positive intention. And, like, what are we doing when we're comfort eating? Like, during COVID, oh my God, I was so busy because so many people were reaching out going, "Oh my God, I'm putting on weight." And I said, "Of course you are. You're concerned about the future. You're concerned about what's going on. And you're very worried and you're very stressed. So let's work on that and get those things down, because your body is going towards the positive. It's going, I don't want to feel this." So what people do is they're looking for a feeling that was good. So what they're doing is they're going to the biscuits that their mother gave them with love when they were a kid growing up. Oh, and we get these associations through conditioning. You are a good boy, you're a good girl. Here's a biscuit, here's a lolly. So because of that association, what happens is we want to be good again, or we want to feel good. So we go to those associations, we go to those biscuits, we go to the ice cream, we go to the things that we were given when we were good. So if we think about it, everything is conditioning. So hence, that's why I've basically forged an industry in brain untraining. Because to get to a level of success, if we're not there, it's because of our conditioning. So what we've got to do is we've got to work out what is the conditioning that's stopping us from getting the level of success that we want. And we've got to untrain that brain. Does that make sense?
I love it. It's so powerful, so exciting. So we want to learn so much more, but let's take a little pause for a minute and we'll be back. Thank you so much.
Are you ready to elevate your energy and awaken your dreams to their fullest potential? This isn't just music. It's transformative, intuitive healing, sacred frequencies channeled to shift your energy, dissolve blockages, and align you with your highest potential. It's your path to vibrant health, limitless dreams, and a life of purpose. Each note is harmonized to your unique frequency, unlocking profound healing, inner harmony, and a deep rejuvenating renewal. Discover the powerful tools of sound healing you carry with you. Visit KarenOlson.com/events to sign up for the free webinar titled Release Stress and Find Inner Peace Through Sound, and explore personalized one-on-one sessions at KarenOlson.com/services. The moment for peace is now. Don't wait. Embrace the healing you deserve.
So let's dive in even more. I have a quick question, because I like to deal with intuition a lot. And would that be the gut brain that you say makes our decisions? We have to say it's safe. And can you walk us through how someone might align their language and tone to speak to all three brains in harmony?
Well, I mean, pointing to the gut being your intuition, again, just tells me how much you know in that space. And it's so true, because the gut is your intuition. You know, some people often talk about it as being the sternum, you know, that area between sort of the gut and the heart, you know, somewhere around there. But typically it is, you know, our language gives us away. You know, I'm going with my gut. In other words, I'm going with my intuition. I haven't got the guts. I haven't got the courage to follow my intuition. You know, oh, I hate his guts. God, he's so intuitive. He's so good, you know, and he trusts himself, you know. So our language pretty much tells us which particular brain is often getting in the way. I haven't got the heart to tell him, you know. Like, he doesn't have the heart to do his job well, you know, or she gave her heart away. You know, and so we get a sense of where the problems are. And then our languaging in the head is all very computer-like. You know, well, let me think about that. Let me process that. That doesn't compute, or that doesn't make sense, or that's not logical. And so we can pretty much hear where the problem areas in our lives are, and which brain typically is getting in the way. The brain, however, that seems to give people the most grief is the head brain, because there's more neurons there, you know, and as a result, we can get lost in our thoughts and in our head so much. So did I answer the question, though? I'm just wondering, because I got so excited.
I know. It's just what I really feel from you is how much you have a balance of all the three brains and really come with compassion, and you feel people and you share from that place of caring, which I think makes it even so much more powerful. And would you feel that when you were saying to live in our heart more, so we can really feel what we do want, and that would connect to our soul and what we feel our purpose is?
Oh, look, absolutely. I saw a statistic recently that really horrified me. And it said that 87% of people, I think the number was 87% of people do not like their job. Now, that clearly says to me that something in the system is wrong. You know, if the large majority of people hate their job or don't like their job, then that tells me that there's a lot of people living from their head, making decisions from their head. If we made decisions from our heart, we would certainly be happier. Mm-hmm. We would be more fulfilled. So my suggestion is to lead from the heart. And there's a beautiful saying that I heard from Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the Conversation with God trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful question, and I think it really helps us to lead from the heart. And the question is, what would love do now? You know, and if we answer that, it's typically going to come from, you know, from the heart. And actually, I'll give you a classic example of this. I'm looking at something at the moment that I just helped one of my clients to put out in the market. And it's a product called DieMinds. Now,
Oh.
this lady who created this product, it's like Sudoku, but it's a little bit more complex. And she had this idea, and I was working with her, and this is her love, but her head stopped the idea from coming onto the market. And I said to her, I said, look, I love this idea. I think it's fantastic. I think it's going to take off. I think it's brilliant. And I said, look, if it's okay with you, let's run with this. Let me help you to take this to market. And so I ended up actually just grabbing her files, putting it together in a book. And
Wow.
I said, here you go. Here's the book. Are you willing to publish? And her head was going, oh my God, oh my God. And I said,
Wow.
look, you've been working on this for 11 years now. Does your heart want this? And she, oh yes. So are you ready to go? Yeah, but what if, what if, what if? I said, let's coach on that. Let's coach your head brain to be in sync with your heart, and then let's get some courage in your gut. Now, after that session, she said, go, go, press the button, publish, publish. And so it's now published,
Here
and
it
it's now
is.
doing incredibly well on Amazon. And
Wow.
so that's kind of how it works sometimes.
That's amazing, all the different levels. And you've already helped us learn about the voice as a tool for healing, but can you help us know how to use our own voice, spoken aloud or silently, as a tool for healing and focus and rewiring all these limiting beliefs we want to let go of?
Yeah, I think a good strategy is talk to yourself like you are your best friend. Your best, most caring, most loving friend. Talk to yourself that way. There's a process in neuro-linguistic programming called disassociation. So disassociation, what it means is we can see things in our mind's eye in lots of different ways, but if I could put them into two chunks. Chunk number one is to actually look at your world through your own eyes, like you are right now. Like you can see everything, you can see things fairly focused in the middle, and then out here to the sides, it's a little bit blurred. So that's called associated. So in other words, you are fully associated in your whole environment. Now, when you are fully associated, you are more likely to feel the emotions of that. However, if you instead of looking through the world through your own eyes, see yourself up here. So imagine you are your best friend up there and you're looking at yourself. What would your best friend say to yourself that yourself needs to get, it needs to know, and it needs to learn from and progress from? What would you say to your self if you were your best friend? So that's a more a disassociated way of looking at life. So it creates that opportunity to be able to say to yourself what you really need to hear. Because something that I find through coaching, I've got to take people through processes to create the transitions. But when I'm working with somebody, I find that I can tap into their brilliance. And quite often, I get my clients telling themselves things that they really need to know. And then I say, there you go. There is your brilliance. There is your wisdom. It's always been there. The lady that I was coaching just before our session today, she went from being, running or the runaway bride. She went from wanting to run away from everything. By the time we got to the end of the session, She felt confidence coming in. She actually tapped into where confidence was in her body, and she let it come into her body. And I took her through lots of problems in her life, and I took that person into those situations, and I said, "What would you do now? What would you do now?" Essentially, what I'm kind of saying is, what would love do now? And so she's going into those events and she's going, like 3-year-old people, teasing her. I said, "Tell me, what do you see now?" And she said, "I see myself defiant with my hands on my hips, going, 'You guys don't know me. How could you be an expert? How could you judge me? Your judgments mean nothing to me, but of course they mean everything to you. They do not affect me." And she walked away and did what she needed to do. So, it's kind of creating, there's lots of tools in transformation, but in essence, there's something that I often say to coaches that I teach, and that is, if you can't see it, you can't have it. So it's really, really important that what we do is we start to build pictures in our brains, things that we can see that resonate with us, have an associated emotion, so that we completely feel congruent to those pictures. Like, I can do this. This looks good. My heart loves it. My gut, it's ready to go, and my brain knows exactly what to do. And so, if we can get a person to do that, we've got success.
So, when people use the disempowering phrases like I can, I'm always struggling with it, how can they replace those with empowering ones? What kind of shifts could they see? And exactly, could you help us know how to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit like, firstly, to understand the I can't. The I can't happens for most of us at a very, very young age. It's called a negative inhibitive habit pattern. And basically, we as very little kids, we can do anything. I mean, parents try to protect children from themselves. I can walk off the edge of the cliff. I am Superman, Superwoman. So little kids almost feel like they can do anything. Thank God they don't walk off cliffs, because there's this inherent amygdala that creates that fight or flight and freeze patterns, whenever we see threat of death. But the thing is that what happens is we overinflame these things, and then we go from I can, I can, I can, no, our parents say, to, oh, I can't. I can't. I can't. And so those I can't patterns become inherent, become part of our program. Our parents are doing the right thing. They're not bad people. They're trying to protect us as children. But the thing is that what happens is they don't realize that that's not inspirational. It's not encouraging. It doesn't encourage risk. And we've got to create risk if we want to succeed, because we've got to risk ourselves, we've got to risk being stupid, we've got to risk falling down, we've got to risk failing, we've got to risk our money, we've got to risk a whole bunch of things. And humans are not encouraged to risk, really. So the thing that we've got to do is we've got to build that risk. So what we can do, quite simply, and I'll give you my own personal experience, I wrote a book called Raw Courage. And I wanted to create a definitive book on how do you get courageous. So I thought, how am I going to start this book? So I started the book from a story when I was 7 years old, when I was given a bicycle. And it was exciting, so exciting. I had a bicycle. But my father said, "You can't ride on the road." So I was condemned to riding on the footpath around and around and around and around the block, and the neighbors would say, "There he goes again, there he goes again, there he goes again." And I was driving myself nuts. And I was thinking to myself, I'm scared of everything. I'm scared of bullies. I'm scared of being hit. I'm scared of being hurt. I'm scared of making a mistake. I'm scared of looking stupid. I'm scared of being me, and I'm even scared of riding on the road. And I remember in this moment, I thought to myself, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of being scared. And I knew that I was going to get in trouble, and I knew I was doing the wrong thing. But I just took in this big, deep breath. I was sympathetic. I'm going to do something. And I jumped the gutter and I was on the road. From that point on in my life, I was free. Yes, I got into trouble, but I took it. I took the punishment. But I was free from that time. I would, my bike became my freedom. I would ride as far as I could in a day and ride all the way back. And I would keep stretching my discomfort zone. So the thing was that further into my life, I also realized I was still carrying with me a lot of fears. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to practice courage. So I did it in a small way, and we can do small steps to get ultimately to big steps. So the thing that I would do, I would go to a restaurant and I would painstakingly look through the menu. Every single thing in the menu, now remember, I had a poverty program as well. So I would look at every single thing, plus I would look at the price. And what I would do is I would look through the menu once and then twice to make a decision, because I didn't want to make a mistake. I wanted to get the best value meal. And so I would drive people crazy, because they'd be going, okay, is everyone ready to order? And I'd be going, no, not yet. And they'd be going, oh my God, here he goes again. And I realized this was fear. So I decided that I was going to go into a restaurant. I was going to look at the menu, run my finger down it, find the first thing I'd like, and go, that's it. Close the menu. Now, that might not seem like a big deal, but for me, it was. It was my first moment of courage. Again, it was breaking through another boundary condition of fear and getting through to the other side to be decisive. Now I can make decisions fast. In fact, my wife says sometimes you make decisions a little bit too quick, but I think it builds the courage muscle. So all you have to do is do something that scares you a little bit, but do it anyway. As long as you're safe, as long as you're going to be okay, as long as no one else is going to get hurt. But, sure, that's the head brain's job. Look at the situation. Make sure that what you're about to do isn't going to affect anyone in a negative way. And if it's not, and if you're going to be okay, do it. But do the little things first, not the big, massive things. Do the little things, but just start building this courageous brain. Because humans, there are so many things to fear. There's so many enormous things to fear. We look at the media. The media gives us enormous reasons to fear. We look on social media, there's enormous reasons to fear there too. But, we've got to protect our brain a little bit. We've got to be on positive podcasts like yours, and immerse ourselves in wisdom and positivity and productivity and courage, and that begins to build confidence.
Wow, so much important and valuable information to help us so much. And I love how you can tell your stories and help us to feel it so that we can grasp it so much more. And I love when you made the example of how we could be like our best friend looking, but then all the stories of how you help people, because sometimes we can't see our own things, we're kind of blind. So, how can people work with you or find out more about all the amazing things that you do and keep in touch with you?
There's so many ways. I've written, I think now 6 books. I'm now working on my seventh. So there's lots of books on our website to read. There's also if people are interested in some coaching, I don't just have coaching products that people can buy and off we go. I like to talk to people before we even go there, talk about what are their challenges, what are their goals, and get a sense of them, and they can get a sense of me too. So because it's a partnership, I offer, free sessions to have a chat. I've got free NLP training tools. There's so much on our Life Beyond Limits
And
website.
what's your website? How can they find it?
It's lifebeyondlimits.com.au. It's an Australian site, of course. But there's just so much on that
Oh,
particular website.
exciting. Can they find you on social media also, or?
Yeah, I'm on, what am I, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram,
And what's your handle? What is your
J
handle?
Rick Schnabel, just Rick,
Perfect.
Rik, Schnabel, Schnabel.
Wow. So many blessings. And we're all in for a beautiful treat, the gift you're giving all of us. So please be comfortable and get in a safe place where you can relax and be transported and transformed. And I thank you with all my heart.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure,
Oh,
and love listening to your musical work. It's
thank you so
I'm
much.
big fan of your stuff, so thank you.
Well, certainly mutual, certainly a blessing. So thank you. Thank you for this meditation too, about perspective and meaning. And it's very deep, and I thank you.
Thank you. Before we begin, please take a moment to honor the music of Karen Olsen. It's titled Heaven's Gate. Let her strings carry you. Let her tones dissolve the ordinary. Her music is not just sound, it's a calling. Calling to you. A reminder of something you may have forgotten, something you've always known. And as the music weaves its way into the spaces between your thoughts, let it guide you gently, 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 toward the gate of something sacred. Toward the gate of your own heaven. Now I want you to listen to my words. Listen to my words deeply. At a level that is beyond the mind and well within your unconscious, or deeper still within your spirit. These words, they are not meant just for your ears. They are meant for your soul. They may awaken something ancient, or they may stir in you something new. Either way, they are yours. Let my words move through you like breath, like water in the river of life, like memory. I would like you to focus upon two very specific words: purpose and meaning. And meaning. And meaning. Purpose and meaning are not merely words. They are blueprints for destiny. They shape lives. They build legacies. They carve the path of who you are and who you are becoming.
Purpose with purpose and meaning in mind. And so I ask you now a question, a quiet, life-altering question. When your day comes to pass through the heaven's gate, what will you say? What will you say to your Maker about the life that you made? Did you fulfill your soul's mission? Did you do all you said you would? Did you do all you said you would do before you were born? Will you? Will you do all you said you would do in this life? And if not now, then when? I ask not to judge, but to awaken. For this is a conversation, not between you and me, but between you and your deepest self. The one who remembers, the one who always knew. You may have the will, you may need the courage. You may have the courage, but not yet the vision. So I ask you now, if you were to find that courage, where would it be? And would it be in your breath? Would it be in your body? Would it be hidden in a memory or blooming in your dreams? Go look for it now, not with your eyes, but with your awareness. Turn inward. That's right. Gently, softly, look in all the quiet places. And if you do have the courage, but not the vision, the clear image of your life fully lived, then I invite you to search again, this time deeper, deeper, deeper down, down, down. Your vision lives in your spirit. It is a spark, a flame, a calling. Go look for it now. Let it show you something, perhaps not with sight, but with knowing. Let it show you that something. Let me guide you further with all my heart. In your mind's eye, picture yourself on your final day. You are older, much older, wiser. Your body may be frail, but your soul is radiant. And there you stand before the gate, heaven's gate. But this is not about death. This is about completion. This is about meaning. And I'm wondering, and it's a good thing to wonder what your thoughts are doing now. As you stand before the gate, you're asked only one question. Did you become all that you were meant to become? Did you become all that you were meant to become? What do you feel? Let it rise. No judgment, only truth. What must you do today? What must you do today to make your answer one of peace, one of salvation, one of love? What must you do today? Let this question echo. Let it become a guide, a compass, turning your attention back to what truly matters. Now, with each breath, imagine a light forming in your chest. It is the light of your soul's mission. It's the color of your truest path. Each breath makes it stronger. Each breath brings it closer. Breathe in and feel courage enter you. Breathe out and let all doubt fall away. Breathe in and feel clarity enter you. Breathe out and let confusion melt. There is a path ahead of you now, lit gently by this inner light. It may be simple, or it may require everything of you, but it is your path, and you are ready. You may walk slowly, but you walk with purpose now, with vision, with courage. Can you see it? Can you see it in your mind's eye? Can you see it in your soul? Can you feel it? And as you walk, I want you to speak quietly in your mind. I am here for a reason.
I remember who I am.
I remember who I am. I remember what I came to do.
I choose to live my truth.
I choose to live my truth.
I choose to walk my soul's path.
I will meet the gate not in fear. I will meet the gate not in fear, but in full radiant completion. Let those words soak in. Let them settle into your spirit. I am here for a reason. I remember who I am. I remember what I came to do. I choose to live my truth. I choose to walk my soul's path. I meet the gate not in fear, but in courage, in full radiant completion. You may return to this space whenever you forget. Whenever the world feels heavy, you may return to the music, to the silence, to the knowing. You are not lost. you never were. Let the light within you continue to glow, even as you return slowly to waking awareness. Your spirit remains open, your vision is alive, and your courage, it has awakened. Welcome back. And may you walk forward with grace through every gate that life offers you until one day you stand with peace at heaven's gate.
I am searching for words after we speak about the words, and want to humbly and courageously share the depth of how much that touches me as such a gift and such a dream for me. When I record, I go into this altered space and I really feel connected to heaven and my ancestors. And about 8 years ago, I had a very intuitive coach profoundly ask me what I'm doing with my gifts. And I had this image of when I arrive in heaven. And it does motivate me, but sometimes I don't feel like I'm able to go there as powerfully with the speed I wish I had. So this is so full circle, because part of it is how much I want to help others living their dreams. And this is very deep for me, and that it's shared with people. And I know they call you the number one unbrain teacher. And I want to give you a new title of being the miracle maker. I thank you for creating this miracle for me and everyone that is touched by it, and for all of your clients who are fortunate to have their lives touched by you. And I ask many blessings for you. And thank you is a little word, but it's with all of my hearts in harmony. And
wow,
all that
Karen.
I have, thank you.
They're beautiful words. Thank you.
Thank you
It's
so much.
something I think that I've certainly learned is I've traveled my entire life, seeking purpose. And something that I started to discover is that we often think that our purpose is our purpose. And something I've come to realize is that your purpose is actually not your purpose. It's often other people's purpose. You're there for other people. That's your purpose. I remember I was coaching a couple who were having challenges in their relationships, and particularly in their marital relationship, and it didn't come from me, it came from somewhere else, I'm sure. But I said to them, I said, success in relationships is really simple. And I said to the husband, all you have to do is do everything you can to make her life magical and fantastic. And I said to her, all you have to do is make his life magical and fantastic. So if we realize that we're actually here for other people, we start to find incredible purpose and magic in our lives. It's kind of like if you've got enormous talents, and
Thank
when
you.
you and this time when I was listening to that audio, I was actually listening to your music mostly. And you could feel it. You could really feel your playing through it. There was a you put a lot of yourself into that. And when you think about it, it's people who listen to it and can feel what you felt, or even their own version of that. That's where the magic is.
Oh, thank you.
No, that's definitely where the magic is.
It's beautiful to be in that place where we can be a part of that magic and the sparks and the it's there, it is on another level, and the blessings and the guidance that comes. So I just am feeling so blessed and know this is going to open up so many things in my life and for many. And I really hope to continue the conversation. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And blessings and love to you and to everyone. Thank you. Namaste.
Thank you so very much for joining us on today's transformative journey. We're honored to have shared this space with you, and we hope you're feeling inspired and aligned with your highest self. For more insights, resources, and to continue your path of healing, be sure to visit KarenOlson.com, your gateway to deeper sound healing, music, and wisdom. Remember, Sound Pathways is here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV, Station 1. Until next time, stay aligned, stay inspired, and let the magic of sound guide you.